She now recognized what grew wild that could be used to make food tastier. She was becoming an expert at telling when meat was done and how to keep it from becoming too dry. Her repertoire of recipes included soup, dried meat, and bread, which she had learned how to bake in a pot over a fire. And Vari knew for a fact that Conan had eaten and enjoyed a couple of her meals, because Fiona had surprised everyone when she came out near the end of one of the dinners and announced to all that Vari had been the one to prepare most of what had been served. But Vari was not done learning. Fiona still had to teach her about fish, certain pies, and many other things. Vari did not want Laurel stripping those from her as well. Laurel shrugged her shoulders. "That you convinced Fiona to teach you how to cook is a miracle, and I won't interfere with it. But if that was going to change anything between you and Conan, it already would have." The shock that Laurel had seen and recognized what she was doing rocketed through Vari. She collapsed by Laurel's feet. "Please help me. Please help me make him see what he is giving up." Laurel swept Vari's hair from her face and cupped her cheek. "I cannot, for two reasons. First, despite what people think, all I have ever done for anyone is given a little bit of advice. A few words spoken at just the right time often can put things into motion. But all the pieces have to be in place first. I cannot create what isn't there." Vari still did not understand.
"But it is there."
"And what words would I say that you have not already spoken? When words no longer work, the only thing left is action, and that is the one thing I cannot do for you." Alarm overtook Vari's expression, and Laurel immediately doused the flames that she could see growing. "I do not know what transpired between you and Conan. I only know something did." Vari sat back.
"Then how do you know I spoke the right words?"
"Because of the second reason I cannot help you." Laurel paused and waited until Vari was looking at her again. "Conan asked me not to." Vari would have fallen if she had not already been sitting on the floor. Conan knew. He had known at some point she would be desperate enough to seek out Laurel's help, and he had feared that she would give it to her because he had feared it would work. That should have given her hope, for it meant that he was struggling with his feelings, warring with them, and yet it did just the opposite. Vari felt all her confidence dissipate until she had none left at all. If Conan was this adamant, she was at a loss. He feared her changing him, but he was the one who had changed her. And for what? An impossible dream. Vari rose to her feet and was about to say her goodbyes when Bonnie came running into the room.
"Guess who is here?" she cried. "Your papa. Valen says you are to come right away."
Vari swallowed. How did God know? The one person she needed more than ever was her beloved father. He would wrap her in his arms and take her away. Away from the pain and the loss and the heartbreak. With a cry, she ran past Bonnie and down the stairwell. Entering the courtyard, she spied him and his massive cart. How he had gotten that thing this far north when winter was only now easing, she did not know, nor did she care. All Vari knew was her father was here, and somehow he was going to make it all better.
"Ahar!"
she yelled. A large man who had been talking to Fallon turned to the voice. Ian Mayboyle had the craggy look of an unfinished sculpture, and yet women found him deliciously appealing. He had a massive, self-confident presence that was so striking it caused those around him to turn and stare. Wings of grey hair fanned out at his temples, adding drama and distinction. With bright green eyes and dark hair, he had a smile that she had heard could cut a man like a knife. But to Vari, he was just her father, a man who loved her without question. Upon seeing her, pleasure softened his granite-like face. He opened his arms wide as she collided into his embrace.
"Ah, Nian, it is so good to see you well and bonny. I have missed you, lass."
Vari hugged him close and felt a shadow over her shoulder. She glanced back to see Laurel and Connor.
"Father, please let me introduce Laird and Lady McTierney."
I'm Ian Mayboyle. A great privilege it is to meet you. Not only is your clan's name well known throughout Scotland, but you took care of my body here, and that means more to me than I can express.
Laurel gave him her warmest, most welcoming smile. She was a pleasure. Ian wagged his finger at Laurel.
Quite a weapon she has there, he said to Connor,
who was about to take exception to this man pointing at his wife.
Those stormy eyes, that smile, her beauty. That combination renders you powerless most days, I bet. My wife could do the same to me when she was alive.
Connor blinked. The man spoke the truth, and Laurel was practically giggling with the idea that she had power over him that she already knew she had.
We were not expecting you so soon. The snow just began to thaw here. It wasn't so bad, though the last day got to be a little bit of fun in parts. Your brother Colin encouraged me to stay longer, but his three wee ones are a bit like his wife, wild and rambunctious. And before I forget, I was supposed to tell you that they have another on the way.
Laurel's fingers rose to her lips. Ashlyn was 7, about to turn 8. Mahara was almost 4, and Connor was not even 2 yet. Thinking of stoic Colin chasing all those children around was enough to bring her to laughter.
"Aye," Ian said to her unspoken words, "I think your brother Colin is actually scared, especially when his wife says that she still plans on having at least 6. The man will have to learn how to relax or go stark raving mad, I expect."
At that, Connor laughed.
"Come and tell us of your travels." "Where would you like me to put my cart?" The man wasn't pleased I insisted on bringing it inside. "But this is my home, my livelihood."
Laurel wiped the tears from her eyes. "Your livelihood is in no jeopardy outside the walls, and you can stay in the North Tower while you are here. I'll have Glynnis prepare you a room." Ian folded his arms and stared down at Laurel, and then finally laughed.
"I would argue with you, but I think I would lose. You have that look about you my body gets, which she got from her mother. It says the argument would be a long and bloody battle, but you're willing to wage it and do whatever it takes to come out the victor. So I shall concede now."
Then he gave a wink to Vari and nudged her side with his elbow.
"You see that, lass? I'm finally learning to listen. If only your mother were here to see it."
"She still wouldn't believe it," Vari said, smiling up at him. "And she enjoyed arguing with you as much as you enjoyed arguing with her."
"Much like the laird and his lady, I suspect."
Laurel closed her eyes and shook her head, trying not to grin and failing. "Colin has been talking about me and Connor, I see."
"Nay," Ian denied, "I would never listen to such gossip. I just sees what I see. And what I'm seeing is that you need a longer pillow at night to sleep, so that you won't wake with your back hurting."
Laurel's mouth dropped in shock. Her back did hurt, and she was not sleeping well.
"You think a longer pillow is all I need?"
Ian walked to his cart and pulled out a large pillow packed with feathers.
"Aye, leave the one you have for your head, and use this to curl up to. This beast here," he said, gesturing to Connor, "is all meat and hardness. No doubt a lot of fun, and the reason you have a bairn on the way. But for the next couple of months, snuggle up to this here pillow, and you will wake refreshed and with more energy."
Connor was about to strongly object. He liked his wife at his side, and most definitely did not want to be replaced by a pillow. But when he saw the look of sheer excitement in Laurel's face, he knew he could not deny her. Vari bit her bottom lip.
"That's Father," she said timidly. "He is very friendly, and always seems to know what you need."
Connor pursed his lips.
"Your father is exceptionally shrewd."
He had met men like Ian before. Led McInnes was one of them. He was his father's best friend, who had moved to the south when he had married a woman who turned out to be Laurel's grandmother. He, too, could within minutes understand those around him, as though he had spent a lifetime in their company. It enabled him to draw one in quickly, so they trusted him. Bonnie stood by Vari. She had followed her outside and had been carefully watching the newcomer.
"I've decided I like you.
she announced, surprising everyone around her. Ian knelt down to her level.
And why is that?
Because you are smart like me.
Ian peered into Bonnie's grey eyes, and what he saw was his own soul staring back at him. Brilliance with a natural understanding of people.
Why, you are quite smart, aren't you?
He said, and swung her up in his arms.
Do your mamma and papa know this?
Bonnie shook her head, to the surprise of both her parents.
Only Uncle Conan, she replied.
Come, let us go and get some ale. I'm sure you are parched after your journey,
Connor encouraged Ian.
Aye, but first let me get a present from my cart before it is sent rolling out of reach.
He went over and shifted some things around before pulling out a large crate. He pried it open, and there inside was a treasure. Books of hemp paper.
I thought on your troubles you would need some more, so this is for you.
Bari gasped and knelt down to see. At least 5 books were inside.
Troubles? How did you—
Shinne, her father answered. I went to see your sister, and she mentioned what you and she had planned to do before the priory had burned down. She explained that you want to see the world, and if I know my sweet Bari, she has found a way to do that besides travelling with an old merchant like me.
Tears filled Bari's eyes. How right her father was, and how wrong.
How is Shinne? You know she was forced to take her vows.
No one can force another to do anything. Shinne is living with that decision, but you know your sister. She always finds a way to locate the sun in every rain cloud.
Bari nodded. Her sister could do that. She was the kindest of souls, but also the most stubborn, and could be a force unlike any other when pressed.
Now, let's go have this drink, and you can tell me all about that man hovering over there with a scowl, and how he is troubling you, lass. I'm guessing he's wee Bonnie's Uncle Conan.
The fire crackled in the great hall, and Bari studied the flames. They had gone to enjoy some ale, and soon word had spread of Ian Mayboyle's arrival. The group grew as Hackaher, then Eileen and Finn, followed by Seamus and Megan, joined them. Their laughter created curiosity, and soon every nearby soldier not on duty, and anyone who was not busy with time-sensitive chores, were in the great hall, listening and laughing, as Ian regaled them with one story followed by another. Some Bari knew, some Bari had participated in, and some she had never heard, because they had taken place after she had left for the priory. Now it was quiet. They had all left, letting father and daughter get reacquainted.
So, Nian, what keeps your heart from smiling? Your lips curl, but there is no light in your eyes, not even for your old father, who travelled all this way to see you. Could it be that I should be arriving to news of a wedding, but I'm not?
Bari should have known her father would have accurately guessed. Conan had joined them, but only briefly. Her father had asked pointed questions about his plans, and Conan had answered them, just as directly. Nothing had been odd about his comments or demeanour, and yet her father had known.
"I wish there to be one. I do. But you heard Conan. He will not change his plans despite all that I've done."
Ian listened quietly as Bari described all of Conan's arguments and her efforts to thwart them.
But he cares not. He refuses to change the dreams he has held on to for the chance at something better.
And nor should he. I don't think I would either. You don't know if you want that life. You've never done it day after day. In 3 days you might be so bored and dirty you'll never want to see Conan again.
But I wouldn't. Bari insisted.
Words, her father said with a shrug. To ask a man to give up his life for a new one, based only on mere words, now that is a lot to ask.
Anger began to boil once again in Bari. She could not believe it. First Laurel, and now her own father. No one believed she could be happy with Conan. That what they shared was not just about love and physical passion— though that was definitely a major incentive, it was much more. This was her life that she was fighting for, a life that she very much wanted.
to travel and draw with a purpose, to meet people and see places, to have complete autonomy over where she lived and went. She would do anything, adjust to anything, and endure anything to have it. It was no wonder that Conan did not believe her. No one did. Ian reached over and tapped her knee. "I can tell you are upset, and have been for a while. What you need is a way to release some of that aggression." He rose to his feet. "I heard Finn mention that his men train every morning in some fields outside the castle walls." "I know them. I've gone to watch a few times."
"But have you joined them?"
Barry scoffed. "I think Finn would have more than a few words at that idea." Ian grinned at his daughter.
"Aye, he will be shocked. You should remember his expression on the morrow and sketch it later. Then give it to his wife."
That got Barry to smile. "But I bet I could convince him to let you join for a while, if only to see what would happen." Barry bit the inside of her cheek and then shook her head. "I'm not in the mood to spar, Papa." A hard glint entered his eyes. "You're angry. You're frustrated. That means you're in the mood. So, tomorrow morning." Knowing it would do little good to argue, Barry nodded in agreement. For somehow, some way, she would be there anyway. Finn held his hands up, and immediately all the activity halted. Conan looked to see why they'd stopped, and spied Ian and Barry.
"What brings you here?"
Finn asked with impatience. Ian gripped Vary's shoulder in one of his large hands, and said with a smile,
"Vary tells me that she has not trained all winter. I'm a merchant, and sometimes that means I encounter people who are not so honest. And Vary is pretty. I need to make sure she still knows how to protect herself before we leave your lands and are back on our own."
Finn looked at Vary, arched a brow, and then coughed into his hand in an effort to hide his laughter. Barry narrowed her gaze.
"For that, Finn, your wife is going to get a present from me later today," she hissed.
Finn had no idea what Barry meant, but he did detect the sharp tone and realized Ian had been serious. Suddenly he remembered Laurel's unusual ability with a bow and thought perhaps he had been too hasty with his assumptions.
"Well, what skills do you have, then, that need practice?"
Ian rubbed his chin.
"Do you have a target?"
"Tell her to go where the women train."
The sharp comment had come from one of Finn's largest men, who was leaning forward against his sword tip in the ground. Buzz was a good-natured but mouthy soldier. He had shown interest in Vary after Loman, and was not pleased when she had made it clear that she was not interested. After that, she had received at least one jeering remark from the man a week. Vary had had enough. With incredible speed, Vary whipped out the knife she had strapped on this morning and sent them zinging through the air. The first hit his sword out of his hand. The next three landed right in front of him, all in the same spot, so that they fanned out, making it clear that each one had landed exactly where she had aimed. Ian slapped his hands together.
"Not bad. He was a little close, but I think we can say that you still can throw, daughter."
He then turned to Finn, whose mouth was hanging open.
"Vary," Ian said, using his thumb to gesture toward Finn, "you might want to remember that expression as well."
Vary nodded. "I think I just might."
"You've proven your aim is still good, but what about the rest?"
Vary scanned the men. Her eyes landed on Conan. His expression was inscrutable.
"Will anyone spar with me?" she asked.
Conan continued to stare at her, but his countenance did not change. He did not move. Nothing to be misconstrued as volunteering.
"I will," Seamus said, stepping forward.
Finn nodded, knowing that Seamus was good enough to give her a challenge without accidentally pushing too far and hurting her. Vary's father might be watching, even encouraging this crazy pursuit, but Connor would have all of them for dinner if Vary got hurt. And that was only after Laurel made them all miserable. 5 minutes later, Seamus found himself on his back, staring at the sky. His side was stinging something awful. He had totally underestimated Vary, and had ended up looking like a fool because of it.
The only upside was that maybe Megan would take pity on him and talk to him. He had scared her at Epiphany, pushed her too far. He only hoped with enough time she would see that they were good together. He could make her happy. But first she had to let go of Clyde, and he wondered if she was ever going to be able to do that.
"I'm so sorry, Seamus," Barry said, clearly upset. "I think you are going to need a thread and needle."
Seamus tried to sit up and winced.
I think you are right."
Barry closed her eyes.
"Father is right. I should have kept up with my skills. I leaned in way too far on that last spin when we were just sparring."
Seamus looked at his side.
"Just sparring? You are deadly, Barry."
Ian took a look.
"Aye, that's a nasty cut."
He offered Seamus an arm.
"Come on, let's go get you cleaned up."
Then with a wave they left and headed back to the castle.
"You have someone good with a needle?"
Seamus nodded.
"Hacker and Laurel."
Ian chuckled.
"I thought you might be wanting that pretty little lass Megan to be tending to you."
I'm not sure she would want to."
Ian grinned.
"She would, and afterwards she'll be talking to you again, and you'll be thanking my Barry here for giving you such a scar."
Seamus hobbled another couple of steps before he realized exactly what Ian had said. Based on all the stuff he had witnessed last night, he had no doubt that Ian Mayboyle had an ability to see into someone like he had never witnessed before. He looked at the older man and then grinned.
"I think I will."
Vary watched as Seamus's hobble turned into a near sprint, leaving her and her father to walk back alone. She looked at her father.
"Did you see what you came to see?"
"Aye, your knives are still good. You are slow with your left hand, and your Conan definitely loves you. So, why aren't you doing anything about it?"
Barry's hands curled into fists. "I know you were listening when I told you all what I had been doing to convince him. You said my actions had no more influence to change his mind than words."
"Your promises are just words, and knowing how to cook over a campfire doesn't mean you will want to do so every meal."
"Then what do you mean? What else can I do?"
"Only you know that. I do know that the man is scared. I felt that way when I met your mother. I knew she was willing to come with me, but I had trouble believing she could really be happy as a merchant's wife. Good thing she was more determined than you. Otherwise I might have left her village alone."
"How did she convince you?"
Ian laughed.
"That woman did the most insane thing I have ever seen in my life," he replied. "She became a merchant, and what's more, she loved it. When I saw her smile after her first sale, I knew she was hooked, and I knew then that I had to have her."
Barry suddenly realized what Laurel had meant. When words no longer work, the only thing left is action. Words were not enough. That's what Laurel and her father were trying to tell her. She had come to them for some way to reach Conan, but that was something she could only do. Barry reached up on her tiptoes and gave her father a kiss on the cheek.
"Thank you, Ahad. I have something I have to do, so don't worry about me if you don't see me for a few days."
Conan entered the great hall and shook the water out of his hair. It had been cold and raining for the last 2 days, and the wind was getting worse. The warm spell they had been experiencing had left with a vengeance. Winter wanted one more storm before it left for the year, and it was going to be a bad one. By tomorrow, everything would be frozen under a thick layer of ice. He moved to sit in his normal spot at the dinner table, surprised to find that he was nearly the last one to arrive. It had been more than a week since he had joined the family for dinner, and he had half expected Laurel to have chased him down, ordering his return by now. She just smiled and waved at him, continuing to listen to something Ian Mayboyle was saying. Everyone was tuned in with rapt attention. Laurel and Eileen's pregnancies were stirring up the old merchant's memories of when Shanae and Vary had been born, and the adventures of bringing them into the world while on the road were the ones he cherished the most. Conan could listen no more. Every time he heard Ian's voice, he remembered the last time he had seen him, and Vary. She had said she could protect herself, but he had no idea exactly what that had meant. It had niggled at him for days before he had figured out why. She could protect herself. Her vulnerability had been one of the main reasons he had been so reluctant to even consider the idea of her coming with him. But she had been right. Vari could protect herself better than most men. Conan decided to risk catching her eye and glanced around the table to see where she was sitting. He looked again. She was not there, nor was there a hole, as if her arrival was anticipated.
"Megan," he clipped, finally getting her attention from Seamus.
She was smiling, and his friend, who had been almost intolerable the last 2 months, seemed himself again.
"Where's Vari?"
Megan finished swallowing her food and then took a sip of ale. She licked her lips. Conan wondered if she was delaying telling him on purpose. Was this some lame scheme she and Vari had hatched to prove he still cared about her?
"I don't know,"
Megan finally replied with a shrug of her shoulders. Connor gripped his mug tightly in his hand and prayed for patience.
"No games, Megan. Where is she?"
Megan put her own mug down and leveled her sky-blue eyes on him.
"I do not know," she repeated. "I have not seen her for days. Her father told us not to worry, so I haven't."
Days, Conan thought in shock. Had Vari been trying to avoid him, like he had her? Or was she ill? If so, why had he not been told? But Conan knew the answer. He had not been around, and had made it clear to Laurel that when it came to Vari, he wanted to hear nothing. But he had meant no advice, not that he wouldn't want to know if she was not well.
"Is someone taking Vari food?"
he asked Brenner, knowing the 10-year-old would be well aware of where Vari was, her status, and why she was not at dinner. Brenner imitated Megan and shrugged her shoulders.
"Well, at least tell me where she is," he hissed.
Brenner's grey eyes grew large.
"I don't know, Uncle Conan."
Conan sat quietly fuming for the rest of the dinner. When everyone stood to leave, he waited for Ian and carefully cornered him. He intended to get some answers, and if Ian thought he could play his mind and word games with him, he was about to learn very differently.
"Where is Vari?"
Ian crossed his arms and rocked back on his heels.
"I don't know. Last I saw her, she kissed my cheek and told me not to worry about her, and that I wouldn't be seeing her for a few days. Last time that happened, I had made her a cloth drawing board. The girl barely stopped to eat, but she slowed down soon enough. If I had tried to make Vari stop before she was ready, she would have resented me and kept drawing, but only for longer."
Conan spun on his heel and headed for the warden's tower. He ran up the stairs and began to bang on Vari's door, shouting at her to open up. When she did not answer, he considered barging in. If he had to, he would, but he knew there was someone to whom she would respond. An hour later he had found Megan, who was in the Star Tower, ensuring his nieces were getting ready for bed. He waited for her to meet him in the hallway, right outside the room.
"I need you to do something," he stated without preamble or pleasantries.
Megan huffed.
"I am done scheming. For Brenna, for Bonnie, for everyone, which includes you."
Conan's face grew hard.
"I am not asking you to scheme," he snarled. "I'm asking you to check on your friend, whom it seems that no one has seen for the past week."
"That's impossible," Megan said.
"Then why haven't you seen her at dinner?"
"I assumed she was avoiding Seamus. She did cut him very badly. He could have gotten a fever and died."
Megan's voice had grown cold, and her anger could not be missed.
"She was not avoiding Seamus. You know Vari. She doesn't run from problems. Ever. It's actually more surprising that she has not checked on him every day, which proves that something is not right."
Megan blinked. She had been rather busy, and after seeing what Vari had done to Seamus, she had been angry with her friend, and not really in the mood to see or talk to her. Just the thought of losing Seamus had scared her enormously. But Conan was right. Megan should have at least seen her in passing. It had been over a week now, and it was clear Seamus was going to recover.
"Vari must be with her father. They will be leaving soon, so she is probably just making preparations."
She snapped her fingers, and relief flooded her countenance.
"I know. In addition to more paper, her father had brought her a couple of books that she was very excited about. I am sure she is simply completely engrossed in them, like you are when you get new scrolls and whatnot."
Megan opened the door to finish checking on the girls. Conan took a deep breath and exhaled. That had to be it. He knew what it was like to get absorbed in a new activity to the exclusion of all else. Vari was the same way. She had probably told her father not to worry, and was having servants run up her food. He stepped into the room and said, "I'm sure you are right, but I need to know for sure." Megan had just started to comb Bonnie's hair.
"You know, only a man in love would be asking this when even Vari's own father is not concerned."
"I don't deny loving Vari, but loving someone does not mean we would be happy together."
Megan looked at him then and swallowed.
"I'll check on her right after I finish here."
"Thank you."
Megan was shocked. This was the first time Conan had ever voiced his appreciation to her that she could recall. She was about to say something to that effect when Bonnie tugged on her sleeve.
"You won't find Vari in her room,"
she whispered, but it was loud enough for Conan to hear her. He marched up beside her.
"What do you mean, Bonnie?"
"She left the castle the day she heard Seamus. I saw her."
Terror twisted his stomach.
"Left how?"
"Neil gave her a horse and a small cart. She put a couple blankets and some books in it and left. I asked Neil yesterday when she was coming back, and he said that he didn't know, that Vari had only told him that she needed an animal that wouldn't be missed for a while. He had assumed she would only be gone that afternoon, because she didn't take any food, but as far as he knew, Vari had still not returned."
Conan felt his heart turn to stone and the sweat chill on his body. An ice storm was upon them. The rain that had been falling down would turn to ice now that it was dark, and it would be coming down hard and painfully. People died in weather like this. Did her father not know this? Did he and Laurel and everyone else assume what he had? That Vari was in her room, drawing or studying a new book? Panic began to take hold, and he fought the urge to race off madly, blindly. Conan looked at Megan, who was beginning to shake with fear for her friend.
"This storm is getting worse, and if Vari is out in it, she won't survive to the morning. Go find Connor and Laurel and tell them that I'm going out now to find and bring her back. But if I don't return by the morning, to form a search party."
Tears filled Megan's eyes to the brim and began to fall down her cheeks.
"Find her, Conan."
"I will, and she will be alive. She will be alive," he repeated to himself. For Vari was his. She had his heart, and now it was time to claim hers. She will be alive.
Chapter 14.
"Thank you, Megan, but don't look so alarmed," Ian chided, his laughter filling the great hall.
Megan was shocked that he, Laurel, and Connor did not move. All three just remained sitting by the hearth, prepared to continue talking and smiling without any concerns.
"My daughter knows how to stay warm and dry in an ice storm. We've lived through many. She knows what to do."
Megan stared at him incredulously.
"You knew?" she asked. "You knew Vari had been living out there on her own for days?"
"Well, how else is she supposed to know if she is going to like it? And after the past few hellacious days, I suppose she does. Otherwise she would have been back by now."
Laurel grinned. "I think we will be preparing for a wedding when those two return."
"You better hope so," Connor snorted. "After listening to you two applaud your devious ways, I would not let you forget it if you are wrong."
Laurel patted his hand. "Oh, we're right. You know it too." Connor looked at Megan.
"You would have thought they had known each other for months, planning this whole thing between Conan and Vari."
He pointed at Ian.
"You need to go, my friend. You and my wife enjoy each other's company too much. It's dangerous. Better run, Megan, while you can."
Conan had been out for a few hours, searching each of the places they had been to during their outings, when he realized where Vari had gone. The day Bonnie had told him she wanted to learn about maps, but he had taught Vari instead, she had identified a half-dozen spots she thought would be ideal places to draw in detail, for they included all aspects of this area of Scotland. When she was not at the fourth area, he began to get worried. The final two were the farthest from McTierney Castle. And if she were not at either of those, he would have to stop and find shelter. He had come prepared to deal with the brutal cold and ice, but based on what Bonnie had said, Vari had very little and nothing to keep her safe and protected. He hoped his brother had waited to send out a search party. It was almost impossible to see, and if he had not known every knot and hole in these parts, he would have injured himself or his horse as soon as he had left the main path. As it was, the fifth place was set atop a rocky cliff that would have been the coldest and least protected from the wind and the elements. Conan feared he might lame his horse and slid off the saddle to guide the animal along the rocky path to the small canyon-like stretch. There were no caves in the area, but at least the rock wall would shield his horse from the worst of the storm. He rounded one massive boulder that had at one time jutted out from the cliff above. Without warning, a knife flew by his face and clinked on the rock face behind him. He jumped back out of sight.
"Know that I missed on purpose, and have more knives, two of which are in my hands. So speak your name, stranger, and pray I recognize it."
Conan could hear the stark alarm in Vari's voice. She was scared, genuinely, thoroughly, deep down scared.
"Then your aim better be damn good," he said, stepping back into view once more. "Vari, I've come to—"
Before he could finish his sentence and say that he was there to rescue her, Vari had launched herself into his arms.
"Oh, Conan, what are you doing out here? You have to be freezing."
"I was looking for you. I didn't know, not until tonight, that you were out here all alone. God, if anything had happened to you,"
he mumbled into her hair, squeezing her close.
"Why did you go? Why did you not return when the weather got bad? Why did you leave me?"
Vari pulled back to answer, but before she could say a word, his mouth crushed hers with animal-like fury. His tongue thrust into her mouth, then withdrew, then thrust again, engulfing her with unleashed need, fear, and lust. Vari clung to him in confusion and desire. Conan held her close and showered her face with hungry kisses, groaning with intense yearning as he frantically sought out new places for his lips. For hours he had told himself that he would find her, and when he did, he would scold her for hours on the dangers of adventuring out alone without anyone knowing where she was. Then he would make love to her until she was limp, followed by another lecture on the dangers of scaring him to death. But with his lips upon hers, all he could think was that she was safe. She was alive, and he never wanted to let her go. Slowly, he released her. He cupped her face and asked again,
"Why, Vari? Why?"
She put her warm hand around his freezing one and said, "Come. Come back where it's warm and dry, and then you can tell me why you are here." Conan followed. Just past the fallen boulder, she had made a makeshift camp. She had leaned the cart over on its side, and between the cliff wall, the boulder, and the cart, she was completely protected from the wind. She must have known the weather had been turning foul, for she had collected branches and stacked them to make a thick temporary roof. A fire crackled next to blankets that were laid out. A large stack of sticks, which included some sizable logs, were in one corner to keep the fire going, and a plate was on the ground with what looked to be a half-eaten rabbit.
"Do you live here now?"
he choked in surprise. Vari laughed and went to sit down on the blanket, patting the spot next to her.
"It does look like it, but I've been here only a couple of days. I would have returned to the castle today, but I feared it might turn worse, and it did. I knew but at least here I would be safe and dry."
Conan unhooked his sword and laid it down before sitting next to her on the blanket she was using as a bed.
"And warm. How did you get dry wood?"
"Some of it isn't, so I have to be careful not to add too many of the wet ones on at a time. but those old broken logs were here already. I think someone else must have used this area for shelter as well." Conan pointed to the roof. "Since when did you know to do that?" Vary grinned. "Since I was a child, we had to build protected places for us to sleep when traveling. It was Shanae's and my job to build the shelter, which included a roof most of the time. It did not take very many wet nights for us to figure out not only how to build them quickly, but how to lay the branches so that the wind won't blow it away and keep everything warm and dry underneath, no matter how harsh the weather. Though I must say, I am glad to be surrounded by these big rocks in this wind."
"You truly were not exaggerating when you said that you could take care of yourself."
Vary shook her head. "Everything I said that night was true, except for one thing." Conan leaned in and put his hands near the fire to get warm.
"And what was that?"
"I promised you that I would be happy living out here, day after day, drawing with only the quiet of my thoughts. That was unfair, for I had no right to make such a promise when I did not know if it was true."
Tension ran through every one of Conan's limbs. Fate was cruel. Just as he had realized he could not live without her, she had realized she could not live with him.
"But now I can," she said, looking up into his eyes. Fear lingered there, and she longed to remove it. She reached up and caressed his chapped cheek. "I've been out here for days now. Did you know that I have never done anything like this? Just out drawing, traveling, alone with only my thoughts to keep me company?"
Conan shook his head. "I mean, at times it was lonely, and I wished you were here so we could talk, but most of the time I reveled in the peace. It was colder than I'd thought, more uncomfortable than I had anticipated, and one night food was hard to find, but despite all of those things, I discovered something."
"And what's that?"
he asked, watching her every emotion as it flitted across her face.
"That I love it. I love the feeling of freedom. I love living by my rules and schedules, and yet still serving a greater purpose through my drawings. I know who I am now, Conan. I am my mother's child, born to roam and never be tied down. That's what makes me happy. And even if you can never understand that, and still believe this life would make me miserable, it doesn't matter any more, because I know what I want now."
"It does matter, Vary."
Lowering his head, he pressed her back onto the tartan padded ground and covered her with his massive body, pushing himself between her legs. He was a love-maddened dolt, and he did not care. His mouth came down on hers in a searing kiss. A hungry sound escaped him as he demanded entry. She willingly gave in, opening for him. Hot and wet, his tongue found hers. He held her in place by the back of her neck as his lips devoured hers in a desperate need to claim her body and soul. Needing to kiss and taste her everywhere, his lips trailed down her throat and suckled the warm pulse, uncaring that it would leave a mark on her. His hands were gliding along her hips and sides, taking everything in. Bari's body screamed for more of him, to give him anything he wanted, to give him all of her. Conan was her every dream, a strong, confident yet tender lover, someone who believed in her, who would let her be herself, a man who could show her things she had never seen before, and at night unleash her passion, matching it with his own. Vary loved him so much, but did he love her? Conan felt the change in her and cupped her cheeks gently in his large hands.
"Vary."
Her name on his tongue was thick with lust. Grabbing her hips, he pulled her against him, creating a wild need for him to plunge his hardness into her.
"I want you, Alwyn."
"But do you love me?"
"Aye,
but you already knew that. I want you to be mine. Every day. Forever."
He threaded his fingers through her hair as if they were precious silk.
"You are mine, Ahushla," he whispered, sounding hoarse. "I claimed you before, but this time I'm never letting you go."
With a carnal sound, he pulled her lips to his and scorched her with his kiss. Bari groaned and leaned her weight against him. This was not like any kiss before. This was a branding, primal, possessive kiss. When she brushed her hard nipples against his chest, she was rewarded with the calloused hand coming up to press her breast with one hand. Her eyes rolled and her head fell back, body arching to his touch. He smiled. Bari wanted him as well. As quickly as possible, he eased off her and removed all her clothing. She lay there before him, the firelight flickering over her body. He marveled at her beauty. Her body throbbed under his stare. Her skin grew hot and sensitive. Bari loved his touch but longed for more. She reached up and pulled his mouth to her waiting lips. She let out a soft, needy moan, and he went wild. He covered her with his massive body, pushing himself between her legs. His hands flowed over her skin, cupping the tightest, most luscious breast that was ever captured by five fingers. She moaned again, and he took her mouth with his as she pressed her core against his painfully hard shaft. She rubbed herself against him, driving him mad with lust. If she continued, he would lose the bare tendrils of control he still had, and he refused to let their coming together be that quick. Pulling away, he grabbed another log and tossed it on the fire, preventing any touch of the cold winter's storm. Then he unhooked his belt, dropping his tartan, and tore his lana over his head, removing the last bit of hindrance between them. He basked in the feel of her soft, naked skin against his own as he climbed over her. Immersing himself in the feel of her soft, warm body beneath him, he leaned down and seared her mouth to his. Her arms came around his neck to lock him in place, as if he had anywhere to go when he had her right where he wanted her. He almost thought it was more than he could bear, and then Bari began to stroke his back and buttocks with roaming fingertips. His shaft strained for her body. He needed to be inside her, but as bad as he needed her tight core clutching his shaft, he had to know she was absolutely ready for him. Bari made an aggravated sound when he removed his mouth from hers and raised an eyebrow at him, but she caught the gleam in his eye, a wicked look burning with promises of things to come. In the next instant, her hard little nipple was in his mouth. Conan twirled his tongue over the first peak, then the next, suckling deeper and deeper. Arching into his touch, Bari cried out from pleasure. The sensation was better than she remembered. It stole her breath. But Conan had only just begun. He continued flicking and teasing her breast with his tongue, letting his hand trail down her stomach and through the soft curls until he met with her core. She gasped once more, mindless, with an overload of sensation. "Is this where you need me?" His voice sounded rough and on the verge of losing control. "Please!" Bari cried out and began rocking her hips in search of relief. Conan's lips returned to her breast as his finger made slow, maddening circles along her opening. Then he delved one finger inside her. Bari's breath hitched, and she opened wider for him. A second finger entered, increasing her pleasure.
"Ahiol Bianic Misha, Conan," she cried out.
The sensations he was creating overwhelmed her, making her heart pound against the wall of her chest as pressure began to build. Her nipple was in his mouth, his tongue swirling over the peak, teasing and stroking her. Bari did not know what to do with the double onslaught of sensations. Conan could feel coiled tension condense about her. Bari opened her knees wider to take him even deeper. She was on the brink. Conan watched her intently, waiting, as the world started to coalesce into a potent point of pleasure. He smiled possessively as the first jolting spasms echoed deep within her, the sound of her panting scream muffled by the storm raging around them. Shifting, he gripped her thighs and opened her legs to him. Her eyes went wide, and her heart began to hammer. He groaned. Bari was just coming back to Earth when she realized what Conan had planned. She shuddered in anticipation.
When his hot tongue met her liquid core, she could not prevent the scream of pleasure that came from somewhere deep inside her. She writhed, thrashing her head on the blanket, and then another scream tore out of her as she climaxed once more. The waves of pleasure seemed never-ending, and all the while he continued his relentless licking and sucking. When Vari finally went limp, Conan rose above her and eased himself between her legs. Slowly he pushed himself against her, rubbing their slickness together. In a rough voice he asked, "Do you love me?" Heart drumming, she gazed back at him and challenged him with a question of her own. "Do you want me?" His answer came quick. "Forever," he replied, and then they came together with the strength of a McTierney Highlander who had found his Sunakar at last. He relished the exquisite feel of her soft flesh around him and dipped his head to take one of her beckoning nipples into his mouth. Forcing himself into a slow rhythm, he eased in and out of her, trying to keep himself from bucking too hard. He watched her breasts rise and fall with her heavy breathing. Her nails dug into his back, and soon she was writhing beneath him. Her legs widened for him, and her back arched, causing her breasts to press against him. "More," she begged, her voice a strained whisper. Bari was the most beautiful creature he had ever beheld. Lifting her hips off the ground, Conan obliged. He thrust into her again and again, filling her full of more pleasure than she thought her body could contain. Ecstasy was a word she had only thought she understood. Her body quaked at the unbelievable feel of him inside her. It was almost too much to bear. She had never felt so connected to anyone, and she wanted the sensation to last forever. Bari heard someone screaming and realized it was her. Bowing her back, her body convulsed around his shaft so that Conan soon followed her. On and on it went for both of them, until they were both drained and fatigued from the onslaught of pleasure. Conan slumped on top of her, holding himself up by his elbows so as not to crush her. Bari nuzzled her face into the crook of his neck. Her legs were still wrapped around him, her hands rubbing his arms, his chest, his back, as if she could not get enough of touching him. Conan rolled to lie beside her and pulled her against him as they slowly were able to catch their breaths. Bari sighed with satisfaction, burrowing deeper into his chest, and Conan knew there was no better feeling than having her in his arms. If he had realized every one of his prior dreams, none of them could compare to being with Bari. They lay there like that, basking in each other for a long while. Not speaking, just touching, kissing, loving each other. Bari awoke to a heavy need. Wetness was pooling between her legs, and she soon began to move. Conan's fingers were touching her, building desire. Her nipples were already hard. Her body wanted him again. She could not get enough. She cracked open her eyes and smiled. The flickering firelight heightened the shadows on Conan's face and illuminated his rich blue eyes. Conan gave her a wicked grin. "I cannot get my fill of you." His voice was husky. "Imagine a lifetime. A lifetime of this." Bari responded by grinding her hips against his turgid arousal. Never had she thought she would be so insatiable. Wearing a luxurious half-smile, she demanded, "I want more." "How much a service?" he said, and then kissed a path down her breastbone to her navel to lave her with his warm tongue. A hard masculine groan vibrated through her core, and Bari shook with sheer pleasure. What Conan was doing to her was nothing short of amazing. He continued to stroke and caress her until he had her panting, chest heaving, body aching. Fisting the blankets, her head thrashed back and forth until there was an explosion of ecstasy. Riding her through it, he dipped a finger inside, heightening her pleasure. "I think I'm addicted to you," he said as he kissed his way up her body, stopping to pay close attention to each breast. Then Conan was inside her. Not hard as the night before,
but gentle. It flooded her mind with bliss. Cupping her backside as he thrust into her, Conan watched her with sapphire eyes. She wanted him harder, deeper. He quickened his movements. Taking her mouth with his, he swallowed her cries of satisfaction and followed her with his own release. Bari snuggled against him as their legs intertwined. "I guess we should dress and get ready to return."
"Aye, since there is a search party looking for you."
Conan kissed the top of her head, but did not move otherwise. Bari tried to move to look at him, but Conan held her in place.
"Why? My father knew I was capable of building a shelter to outlast the storm."
"Maybe, but I did not know that."
Bari giggled.
"We should probably return soon then to let them know they don't have to send a search party out for you."
Conan tickled her side. Bari screamed and began to thrash. By the time she begged for mercy, he was atop her and she was breathing heavily. He had to fight the urge to take her once more.
"Maybe we should return, because you need to plan a wedding."
Bari's soft green eyes sparkled with love and excitement.
"A wedding?"
"Aye, a wedding."
"By chance, whose wedding would I be planning?"
Conan leaned down and kissed the top of her nose.
"It just so happens you will be the bride and I will be the groom."
Bari bit her bottom lip, her grin large and full of joy.
"And when is this wedding to take place?"
"Tomorrow, right at sunset."
Chapter 15.
"Tomorrow afternoon?
I think not," Laurel choked out, the sound echoing in the great hall.
"That is not nearly enough time."
"For what?"
Conan asked, mystified as he snuggled Bari closer on his lap. He was wondering how he was going to last tonight without her in his arms, and if they had enough time to marry today. Sunset, when all the McTiernays wed, was a little more than an hour away. It was possible.
"There is a considerable amount to do," Laurel stated in her most authoritative voice.
"I agree with Conan," Connor chimed in. "Tomorrow is good. The sooner you are wed, the sooner calm re-enters my life."
Laurel took his hand and rubbed her round stomach.
"You, my love, are about to have another child. Calm is not something you are going to see again for a long, long time."
Connor grunted.
"And as far as a wedding, Conan, yours will not be taking place next week, let alone tomorrow."
"Next week?" Conan shouted.
"I said not next week. I would guess 3 weeks, at the very least."
Hackaher nodded.
"And that is only if Connor sends the runners out today. People will need time to prepare."
Conan stilled.
"What people?"
Eileen waved a finger over Bari's form.
"And you need a gown?"
Excited with the idea of a new outfit that was not a hand-me-down, Bari slid off Conan's lap.
"A new dress? Oh, it will be the most beautiful dress ever created," Megan sighed. "I've some ideas that I want to share with you. And your hair, we need to wait a few weeks for the spring flowers to bloom."
Seamus elbowed Conan.
"Looks like your marriage is waiting on flowers, my friend."
"People?"
Conan repeated, this time with a little more force. "All of us have been looking forward to this happy event for months, and nothing," Laurel paused to look at Conan and then her husband Connor, "is going to ruin our plans."
"Just what do you mean by people?"
Conan croaked.
"Well, did you think that we are the only ones who are going to want to witness this event?" Laurel huffed.
"Because you could not be more mistaken. I have a feeling when word spreads that you, Conan McTiernay, are not only wanting to get married, but have found a woman who also wants to marry you, our home is going to draw quite a crowd."
"Then we will marry today. I am not someone people need to come and ogle at."
Laurel scrunched her nose at the idea.
"They won't be coming to see you. They will be coming to see Bari. And when we are done," she said to her soon-to-be sister-in-law, "you will be the envy of every woman in Scotland."
Vari's eyes grew large with excitement. She looked at Conan, who was scowling. She grinned at him and shrugged her shoulders. "We're waiting," she said with such happiness he could not say no. "It isn't every day a girl gets to be the envy of every woman in